viewing it from a slightly different perspective so that the logical structure becomes more clear. So remember that what we are studying are ground states of spinless free fermions, and that this, because, well, since they are Gaussian states, we have Wick's theorem that says that instead of having to talk about the whole density matrix of the state, which will be exponentially large in the number of fermionic modes, we can restrict our attention to the correlation matrix. Okay. This correlation matrix is only grows linearly in the number of modes. So the structure was the following. First, we start with one mode. Let's have a look at one mode, right? And in this case, the correlation matrix is just a number. It's this number, expectation value of A dag A. And we just parameterize it. We say that this defines some mu, okay? And then I argued that in that case, the density matrix is written in this form, okay? And I invoke, well, parity preservation and so on to say that these elements had to be zero, and then these two elements are directly the eigenvalues of the density matrix, and we can compute the entropy. The entropy is directly the entropy of a vector with components 1 plus mu divided by 2 and 1 minus mu divided by 2. And so we have a nice closed expression for n equal to 1 mode. Now, let's consider the case where we have n modes. But to start slowly, let's suppose that they are uncorrelated. Okay. So what do I mean by n uncorrelated modes? Well, in this case, the correlation matrix, which is now not just a number, but really an n times n matrix, I'm going to assume that it has this structure, which says that the correlation matrix is diagonal. Okay. So each mode, mode 1, mode 2, mode n, is not correlated with any other mode. You take the expectation value of A1 dagger A2, you get 0. Okay? That is the notion of uncorrelated modes. And in this case, we realize quickly that this is just n times the problem we had with one mode, in the sense that we can introduce this parameter mu k for each mode, which is just a way of rewriting this expectation value. And if we look at the corresponding density matrix, then we find that the density matrix, which is now 2n times 2n matrix, factorizes into tensor product of density matrices corresponding to each mode, right? And each density matrix just has this structure. So this is just n times the problem of one mode when the different modes are not correlated. And in particular, the entropy of these n modes will be the sum of entropies for each of the modes, right? Is that clear? Okay. And before we go to the case of n correlated modes, let me mention something that you are seeing all the time here, which is the correlation matrix for different modes which are uncorrelated can be understood as the direct sum. Okay. We are adding together pieces in this matrix. So this whole matrix can be understood as this piece plus that piece. If we look at the density matrix, what we have to do is we are dealing with a tensor product structure. So if we have different modes, for the different modes we have to take the tensor product of the density matrices for the different modes. And that explains why this object has dimension 2 to the n times 2 to the n, whereas this one is n, an n times n matrix. Excellent. And that's what's nice about free fermions, that instead of having to deal with the whole Hilbert space, we have the reduced picture in terms of n times n matrix. So what's the real thing then? The real thing is this one here, where we have n correlated modes. Okay, but if we have understood how to deal with n uncorrelated modes, then the case of n correlated modes is fairly easy. What we are saying is we have now an n times n matrix with no further structure. We only know that it's a Hermitian matrix. But automatically, if it's a Hermitian matrix, we know that there are unitary transformations that will allow us to diagonalize it. Okay? So there is some unitary transformation that will allow us to write C as this unitary with unitary conjugate. And in the middle, we just put the eigenvalues of this matrix. But that part here is nothing but n uncorrelated modes, okay? And we just saw how easy it is to deal with n uncorrelated modes. So in the picture of the density matrix, now we have this huge density matrix, but there is some unitary V such that we can diagonalize rho. And then when we do that, we'll see the tensor product structure. Okay? So the summary is that if they give you a correlation matrix, if they give you a correlation matrix for n correlated modes, so a generic correlation matrix is just a Hermitian operator, what you need to do is if you would like to study, for instance, the entropy of this correlation matrix, what you need to do is you diagonalize it. Then you see that you have n uncorrelated modes. And for that problem, we already saw that it's very easy to compute the entropy. Just compute the entropy of each mode, add them together, you're done. Okay? So that's a summary of what we saw yesterday, maybe slightly different. Any question? All right, so if there are no questions, then let me continue with this analogy where we see that there is a direct sum in the correlation matrix corresponding to a tensor product for density matrices. And then let's see what happens when we want to go from n modes to l modes. And what we're saying then is we have a correlation matrix, which is a n times n matrix. So we have n modes here. And if we want to study now, if we want to look at some region, some subset of the modes, we would like to build the correlation matrix for this subset of the modes. Okay, so this would have, say, region A with L smaller than n modes. Then all we have to do is we take this matrix, imagine that these indices here and these indices here correspond to the modes that we want to keep, the L modes. So that's going to be, how do I do this? Let's say from here to here, that's the L modes that we want to keep. They're from here to here. Then all we have to do is we just take this submatrix here, the elements containing here, and this is just CA. Okay, so if we want, so remember that if we had a density matrix, the corresponding thing would be we have rho and we want to obtain from here, we want to obtain rho for a subset of modes, then we will have to take the trace, partial trace over the rest, the complementary of A, on the density matrix for the n modes. So here we have to take a partial trace for density matrices. For correlation matrices, we can just ignore the rest and just keep the submatrix that we are interested in. All right, so then let's look at ground states. And at the end of the class yesterday, we started to do that, but let me summarize again or explain a bit more explicitly. That would be ground states. Of quadratic Hamiltonians. And of course, this is for spinless fermions. And I'm going to assume that we have a U1 symmetry, so particle number preservation. And let me start again with first explaining the n equal to 1 case. Suppose that we just have one mode, in which case the Hamiltonian is very simple. It's some energy times A dagger A. And what's the ground state of this Hamiltonian? Well, this Hamiltonian is diagonal in the particle number basis. So the ground state is, let's see, ground state it's very simple. It's a state n, where n could be 0 or 1. And n is going to be 0 if epsilon is positive, if having a fermion gives you more energy than not having a fermion, right? So if epsilon is positive, and it's going to be 1 if epsilon is negative. So what we are saying is, suppose that having a fermion gives you negative energy, then that would be the ground state. Okay? If it gives you positive energy, then it's, you are better off, you have lower energy without a fermion. So n equal to 1 is very simple. So what does this mean then for the correlation matrix of the ground state? So in this case, we have A dagger A. It's going to be equal to 0 if the energy is positive, if epsilon is positive, and 1 if the energy is negative. Okay? This thing here, what it actually means is you are evaluating. So if you look at this, this is equal to, I mean, this is evaluated on the ground state, so this is the same as measuring the number operator on the ground state, which is given by the number operator. Okay. So if the ground state has 0 fermions, then you get 0. If the ground state has 1 fermion, then you get that this is 1. All right, so let's quickly then look at the next level of complexity, which will be n, the case where we have n uncoupled modes. So in this case, we are assuming that the Hamiltonian has the form is a sum over different modes. Of terms like this, so the Hamiltonian doesn't couple different modes. There is no ak dagger ak prime term, right? It's just ak ak. So there is no hopping term between different modes. So this problem is just n copies of the one that we just solved. So what does this mean? It means that the ground state will be given by sequence of zeros and ones, and how do we decide whether we put a 0 or a 1 on each position? That will depend on the sign of the energy term, right? So the mode k, if the sign of epsilon k, if epsilon k is positive, then we want that mode to be empty. If epsilon k is negative, then it's energetically more favorable to have that mode full. So the ground state is a sequence of zeros and ones, right? That will get us the lowest possible energy. And what does this mean for our correlation matrix? So here the correlation matrix was very simple when we only have one mode. So now we have n uncorrelated modes, n uncoupled modes, which happen to be, so the dynamics is that there is no coupling between them, and this results in a correlation matrix for n uncorrelated modes. So correlation matrix is going to be, it's going to look like, it's going to be diagonal, and then it's going to be a collection of ones, and then, so this would be for any epsilon that is smaller than 0, and for epsilons that are larger than 0, we'll have zeros. Okay, so this is our correlation matrix. So this is the correlation matrix of the ground state of the system. Okay. Good. So then the last piece would be if we have n couple modes, So now H, Hamiltonian, is a bit messier. Because there are hopping terms between different modes. But what did we learn already? Well, this matrix can be seen to be Hermitian, and therefore M can be written as, it can be diagonalized using some unitary transformation, and what we get in the middle is a diagonal matrix with real entries. Okay? So after a change of basis, these N modes have become decoupled. So we can apply the result we just saw. Okay? So what that means for us is that the correlation matrix for the correlation matrix for the ground state is going to be some unitary transformation that will bring us to the uncoupled, uncorrelated basis. And here we know what the structure we have. Okay? So that's it. That's all that we have about free fermions in the case where we have U1 symmetry. So if they give you Hamiltonian and your goal is to compute entropy properties of the ground state, the first step is to find the ground state. Okay? And how do the correlation matrix for the ground state, and how can we do that? We take this matrix, which is Hermitian, we diagonalize it, okay? And we keep this U and U daga. Now, once we have diagonalized this matrix, we know that the correlation matrix for the ground state is going to be U, U daga with this diagonal matrix, where we just went to this one, and every time we had a negative value here, we replace it with a 1. Every time we see a positive value in the diagonal, we replace it with a 0. Okay? So this gives you the correlation matrix for the ground state. Okay? And once you have the correlation matrix for the ground state, you can decide to trace out some of the sites and get the correlation matrix, the reduced correlation matrix for a part of your system from which we can compute the entropy. Okay? So this is the general scheme. This is valid for, so this description was for U1 symmetric. So this U1, what it means is that the Hamiltonian contains terms which are of the form A daga A only. It doesn't contain terms of the form A daga A daga, for instance. These are excluded. Okay? Now, if we have those terms, then we have a Z2 symmetric Hamiltonian. So Hamiltonian now can contain terms of the form A daga A, but also A daga, and A, A. And this case is slightly different, right? We have not explained how to solve it, but just to give you a hint of what you have to do, you have to go into what's called, so yeah, we have to define Majorana modes, which will be, so we will take C, if we just had one, C, Majorana modes C, and then we will have C 2i minus 1 would be equal to A,
it can be some kind of a
loop. Sorry?
It can be some kind of
It is, it can be understood in this way, yes. So, am I doing this properly? AI daga, and then C2i will be defined as AI minus AI daga divided by I. And so basically you go from, so we have, we go from N fermion modes, we switch to 2n Majorana modes. Okay, this is the change that you have to do. If you do this change of variables, then all the discussions we had about finding unitary transformations that will diagonalize everything. So if with And fermions, the key was to find unitaries in, so we had a correlation matrix, which was n times n. And we wanted to find unitaries belonging to un to diagonalize whatever we had. Now we end up with some new correlation matrix, which will be 2n times 2n. And instead of the group U1, we'll be dealing with orthogonal transformations. So let me write it this way. U will belong to O to N, orthonormal group on 2n. So I'm saying that we have only seen the case of U1 symmetric Gaussian states. But if you are interested in the more general case where you only preserve Z2, the parity, then you can follow the same logical scheme. You have to make a couple of replacements, and then you are done. Okay. So the message is that free fermions are very useful for our purposes because we can actually find the ground states of these many-body Hamiltonians, of these very large systems, and study their properties. And let's have a look then at the properties for a specific case.
I make sure one thing.
Yeah.
So the free fermion in the case with the U1 possible number symmetry, you can always write on this properties Mij I take Aj. But in, if you break the U1 to Z2, for example, like BCS superconductor,
yeah,
we include this A take A take, so A term. Actually, in the BCS superconductor or super free picture, it's still interacting. But you can find a basis such that the quasi particle is free.
You can do it this way. You can go with Gogolyubov transformation.
Yeah, so they will go to
but
this.
What I'm saying is that there is a standard way in which you just write a correlation matrix for these other modes, which you don't have to keep track of A, the correlation matrix A daga A and A daga A daga as two different entities. You just put it all together into a single matrix, and then you replace, instead of working with unitary transformations, you have to work with orthogonal transformations, and it does all the job for you. So you don't have to think of what is the proper Bogoliubov transformation. It's equivalent.
Yeah. But I just say that the free fermion here, you mean is that you can find a basis such that the
free right, is right. Free. So some people would call it quasi-free.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it's fair enough. I'm just saying it's quadratic.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm done. All right, so let's move on then. So let's look at specific lattice models. For quasi-free, last No. It's good. It's good. So the literature, you know, you can find many different terminologies. So let's call it quasi. In some cases, quasi-free, spinless fermions. Okay, and so let me write the Hamiltonian that we'll be considering in general, and this is going to be, it will consist of a hopping term, rejector gets all the way to there, so I'm going to write it here. Okay, so what we have here is you want to think we're in the dimension, so we'll have square lattice, for instance, in two dimensions, or just a lattice in 1D. And what we have is that we have some hopping terms. Okay, this is sum over nearest neighbor, so the hopping terms involve nearest neighbor only. And then we have this is hopping. Then we have a pairing potential. This one is the one that is not U1 symmetric. And then we have a chemical potential. Okay. So this is a Hamiltonian that we will look at ground states for and in several different cases. And let's start with D equal to 1. So in D equal to 1, and I'm going to assume first gamma equal to 0. Okay. So that means there is no pairing potential. And in this case, we have, therefore, that you have we have U1 symmetry. And what this means is that all the formalism that we've been describing applies here. Okay. And if we take that Hamiltonian in one dimension and we put gamma equal to 0, then, some of you at least tried to solve this for lambda equal to 0 last night. So we can look at how the dispersion relation looks like. So the dispersion relation being these energies. And it's very simple. And then we can consider two cases if we have a gap system. So let me plot this dispersion relation. This is K. This is the energy of the modes. And we can have the situation where this dispersion relation looks like this. Okay. So we have a gap. So let's say there is a gap. Let's describe the gap here as the energy of the excited state. First excited state minus the energy of the ground state. And in this case, if the gap is larger than 0, well, we can see that that would be an example where this happens, where we can see this is the gap. Okay? This is the gap, the difference between zero energy and the smallest energy of an excitation. So you have all the tools, you can solve this for this Hamiltonian, and what you will realize is that that's a very disappointing ground state. If you look at the correlation matrix, it's just a collection of zeros. Okay. What's happening in this case is that the ground state says, well, I don't want to have any fermion. So the ground state is a product state. So it's a rather useless exercise, but just for reference, for later reference, we could now look at the correlations. So the correlations we could understand as these coefficients, for instance, for the first row. And what we find is correlation as a function of distance. It's very simple. There are no connected correlations. Nothing. Okay. If we look at the entropy, what do you expect for the entropy? So how is the entropy of a region going to scale with the size of the region? This one is easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much is it? Okay, so what's the ground state? The ground state is this one. There is no entanglement. So if you trace out all the modes except for a few, they are still in a pure state. Right? So how much is the entropy? Okay, so zero. Now things get much more exciting. If we consider the gapless case. So in this case, the dispersion relation, so we are using the chemical potential down there to change the dispersion relation so that it's no longer positive defined. And so in this case, we could have something like this. Okay. And so that's the dispersion relation. There is no gap. And so what, and this will happen for lambda if the value of lambda is absolute value of the chemical potential is smaller than one. And so what do we find in this case? Well, suddenly we have some non-trivial correlation metrics, which we have explained how to compute. And the ground state, I'm not going to write it. I don't know how it looks like, but I have the correlation metrics. I can compute it. And so I can, in particular, start putting correlations, looking at correlations. So how these correlations decay with the distance. And if I do that, it's more convenient to plot it in log-log scale. And it turns out that in log-log scale, you get a very nice straight line, okay? And I showed you yesterday an example of that. And so what that means is that the correlations decay as L to some power. They are polynomially decaying correlations. And in this case, if you look at what you get that this power is equal to 1. So very, very concrete number. And what happens with the entropy? So if we look at the entropy as a function of, and in this case I'll plot it, so entropy of a block of size L as a function of log of L, I get really quite amazingly a straight line. And then, I mean, these are numerics. So we can see them later. And this scaling, this goes as 1/3 of log L. Okay, so. Did anybody get this yesterday? How many of you did manage to finish the calculation? 1, 2, 3? 3 people? Seriously? No. So how many of you? Please let me know. Okay, now it's 4, 5, 6. Okay, well, all right. It was a Fourier transform, right? So you can see this scaling. Now, it turns out that if you change the chemical potential, if you go and change this chemical potential, this shape will change a little bit. Maybe it's going to go down a little bit and so on. But when you plot the scaling of entropy, it gives you exactly the same scaling. Okay, that might be a constant here that may depend on the chemical potential, but it's a log with a 1/3 in front. And so what this is starting to tell us is that if we start entanglement in systems, in many body systems, we might be able to capture some notion of universality. For instance, what's happening here is that this is a critical system, and there might be many microscopic details that govern the Hamiltonian, maybe this lambda, the chemical potential, but all these systems correspond to a phase transition that is in the same universality class. And this coefficient in front of the log is going to give us information about this universality class. Okay, so we'll see this tomorrow.
Is there a question about the Hamiltonian on the upper there?
Yeah.
So if I look at how lambda appears, I would expect that if lambda is big enough, yes, then you would expect many particles in the ground state.
That's correct. So if so, the gap case corresponds to lambda, mm-hmm, an absolute value larger than 1. Okay. So we describe that case, but if lambda is sufficiently small, then we'll have the dispersion relation will all be negative. So imagine the case that the dispersion relation is all down here, and so now the gap is this quantity here. So in that case, instead of having a product state like this, we would have that all the modes are full. So again, we have 0 correlations, 0 entropy. Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. So
zero computation for small lambda and big lambda.
For very large lambda and very small lambda, meaning larger.
Okay, I mean a trivial ground state.
It's a trivial ground state in some sense. One is completely empty, the other one is completely full of fermions.
So if we increase lambda, we get particles in the ground state according to the Hamiltonian? But if I look at the spectrum there, 2 lambda minus cos k, if I increase lambda, I expect no particles in the ground state. That was my question.
If you increase lambda?
Yes. So if you increase lambda, if I look at the Hamiltonian, I expect particles to appear in the ground state.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're saying there might be a sign?
Oh, well, or I'm not understanding.
So, okay, I can have a look later, but it's just there might be a sign.
Okay, sure.
But that's all. So the lambda is encouraging to have more particles or less particles. That's correct. And extreme values of lambda will leave you with no particles at all, or all fermions are there, and in both cases you have a product state. Yeah. All right. Excellent. So let's keep going then. So the problem with having working with U1 symmetry in one dimension in this particular case is that the structure is very simple. You have either a critical system or a trivial product state. So what we want to do now is just to describe what happens when we have still in d equal to 1, we can put the pairing potential different from 0. So in this case, we don't have particle number conservation. We only have parity conservation, so Z2 symmetry. So that's the case where this formalism doesn't apply, but you still have, after a few replacements, you could still compute that. And so in this case, what do we see? Well, we can consider the gap case first. And then I could draw again this, but it's as there will be some dispersion relation. And again, we'll have some non-zero gap here. But then, even in the gap case, we have that the correlation matrix is non-trivial. Okay, so we no longer have a product state for the gap case. And if we plot the correlations, the correlators, what we find is I'll plot them again log C of L, function of L. And this is what we would have if we have polynomial decay of correlations. But what we actually get is something that goes a bit like polynomial decay, but at some point it goes down much faster. Okay? And this occurs at some characteristic length, which is the correlation length in the system. And this correlation length goes as 1 over the gap. Okay, so what we find is an illustration that if you have a gap in the system, then for sufficiently large distance, all the correlations decay exponentially fast. And what do we see then in the entropy? Well, in the entropy, we could plot it again in the same expecting a logarithmic scaling, so log L is a function of S of L. But in this case, instead of finding this straight line, what we find is for a while it follows a straight line, but then it saturates. Okay, and this happens again around the correlation length in the system. So basically, it's as if we had a critical system up to some correlation length, and after that, there are no correlations left. There are no new contributions to the entanglement entropy. Okay, so that's what we have. And then two more observations about this is that in this case, if we look at, so it is quite fascinating because this behavior here, before we hit the correlation length, that's also one third of log L. So we are not at the critical point, but we're seeing that this is close to a critical point. And we can extract some information about the universality class of this phase transition already. Okay? But the scaling is of this form. The entropy grows until it saturates to a constant. Then if we look at the gapless case, we'll find some, in general, we'll find some dispersion relation. There is no gap, again. What's quite interesting is that for some particular value of parameters, that would be gamma equal to 1, lambda equal to 1, okay, we'll find a dispersion relation that looks like this. Okay, so it's gapless. And it's quite fascinating that if you look at the correlators, so if we look at the correlators in general, what we're finding is that they decay for the gapless case, again, as a power law. This goes as L to the minus 1, except that let me draw this particular case in red. This one now comes here and decays as L to the minus 2. Okay, so suddenly, so we always found the same behavior, and suddenly for one particular case it goes in another way. Okay, and if we look at the entropies, then again we find 1/3 of log L, except that for those particular values, we find 1/6 of log L. Okay? So you can see that every time we compute these quantities for in the case of gapless systems, that we're finding the same results, characteristic universal scaling of the entropy and of the correlations. But for some particular values, we find a different behavior. So this corresponds to another universality class. Okay? And for those of you who are familiar with the spin models, this would be the XX universality class, and this is the Ising model universality class. This model here is dual to the critical Ising model with transverse magnetic field. And this one would be in the same universality class as the XX quantum spin model. Okay, so another one interesting thing to observe here is that there is a clear difference between this case where we have two zero modes and this case where we have one zero mode. And it might not be a coincidence that the growth of the entropy is proportional to the number of zero modes. So what I'm saying is, in this case, we have one zero mode, and the entropy grows as 1/6 of log L. And when we have two zero modes, right, the entropy is growing as twice as much, 2/6 or 1/3 of log L. So there might be a relation. Maybe by looking at the entropy and entanglement, we can learn about how many zero modes the system has. Okay? But this is quite interesting because this information, we are getting it from the ground state. The ground state does not, in general, it's just the ground state. Right? The Hamiltonian contains information about the excited states, but the ground state should be just one eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. Well, just from the ground state, it seems that we can see how many zero modes, which are excited states, how many zero modes we have in the system.
But if you don't take gamma equals 1 and you fix lambda so that parabola goes up to the tip, then you also have one zero mode, right?
Wait, X-axis. This one?
In the x-axis, yeah.
Okay, so that's a very good question. Or it wasn't a question, right? Very good observation. Sorry?
They'll change your CFT skill.
Well, the thing is, this is very different. Let me address that first. So here what we're having is that if you zoom in, you have the dispersion relation is cutting, it's linear around zero. In this case, if you zoom in, this is quadratic around zero. So this is related to a CFT, so conformal field theory, it's described, it has some properties, some symmetries. The field theory that describes this is of some type. And here it's a completely different type. So it's a very good observation, but I don't have much to say about this case. It's just a very special case, okay, where the entanglement, so the ground state here is trivial, right? It's still a product state, because all the dispersion relation is positive, except that you can create excitations without paying any energy. So it's a delicate case. So let's put it in a box and keep it for later. And hopefully you'll forget about it later.
Can I make a guess? Maybe I'm wrong. But I think you should know. You maybe know. Say, given some system, we know dispersion relation,
yes,
some gapless modes. And suppose that we compute entanglement entropy.
But the entanglement entropy is trivial here. Because this is a the ground state is a product state. I just said that. It's a product state. You still have 0, 0, 0, 0. No fermions.
You mean for the case was just the
for this case, right, all the modes are in state 0. So there is no entanglement entropy to discuss. OK? All right, so so what do we want to do? We want to go to d equal to 2.
Can I just make sure?
Sorry?
Let's just make sure.
Yeah?
I saw that there should be some kind of a critical theory for this type of dispersion relation.
There is a critical theory there.
Like this should C equal to 2.
It is, yeah, it has to do
so,
with that.
So the entanglement will not be, will be 0?
Well, the ground state has is a product state, so there is no entropy to discuss. It's entropy is equal to 0. But that doesn't mean that there is no, I mean, that's a very interesting point, that particular system, right? But I'm not going to discuss it because from the perspective of entanglement, it's trivial. So there are many interesting things to be said, but not from the perspective of entanglement. Okay. So then d equal to 2. That's a good moment to start this. So first we can consider again gamma equal to 0, which means that we have U1 symmetry. And then, in this case, again, we can have the gap case. So let me try to draw this, but maybe it's usually a disaster. So you can imagine we have, this is kx, this is ky, and now we have some dispersion relation. But there is a gap, so it's the whole thing is positive defined, the whole dispersion relation. So there is some gap. Okay. And in this case, what we find again is that the ground state is trivial. Okay, all zeros, no fermions, and therefore trivial scaling of entanglement entropy, trivial scaling of correlations. And then we can look at the gapless case. And so in the gapless case, what we find is that now we have a dispersion relation that cuts in a non-trivial way. So if we look at this from the top, and we look at the modes that have energy equal to 0, okay, we get a collection of modes with energy equal to 0. So that has a Fermi surface. And what's coming up? Then again, okay. What do we find? And can you see this at all?
Do you want to switch the lights off or?
I can do that here.
I'm not sure I want to do
that. That's okay? Okay, so can I zoom in? Probably, right? So what do we have here? What we have here is this dispersion relation I was trying to draw, okay? And this, again, is a calculation done by Yang Gang. If it depended on me, we would still be on the blackboard. Management, security stack, okay. So this is the dispersion relation. Now, when we cut, this would go deeper, but we just redefine all the negative modes as positive, okay? So what we can see here in this particular case is that there is a line of zero modes. So if we look at this, this kx and ky, we look at the Fermi surface, this looks like that. Okay? This Fermi surface looks like this. And in this case, we look at correlations in the x direction. This is x direction, right? The correlation? Yeah, in the x direction. And we find, look at this coefficient in front of the log. It's 2.0000, I don't know, 5 digits precision. OK. So we get a very nice polynomial decay of correlations. And then let's look at the entanglement. And so this is the scaling of entanglement for a block, square block, L times L. And when you plot it as a function of L, you see that it's not, it looks almost like a straight line, but it's actually growing faster than a straight line, okay? So a straight line would be the boundary law. It would be proportional to the boundary of your region. But this is growing faster than the size of the boundary of the region. So if you plot it in, if you divide by L, so if you plot the entropy divided by the size of the boundary, then you see that indeed, it's not a constant, it keeps growing. But this very much looks like a log, logarithm. Okay? And so finally, if you plot the entropy as a function of L log L, expecting that it has a logarithmic violation of the boundary law, then what you see is that indeed, wow, it's a perfect match. Okay? So this is an example where we have a violation in 2 dimensions, a violation of the boundary law for entanglement. Okay? And now we can play with this. So we can go to the Z2 symmetric case and find many different situations. So we have a dispersion relation for a gap system. So you see that it's a finite gap here. And then what we would see is that whenever we have a gap, there is a boundary law. Okay. Now, there are situations, very interesting situations, where we don't have a gap. For instance, in this case, there are 2 points. The dispersion relation is positive, except for these 2 points where it vanishes. So there are 2 zero modes here, okay? 2 zero modes. So if we look, this system is critical. The polynomial, the correlators are polynomial. But if we look at the scaling of entanglement entropy, we find no logarithmic correction. It's just a boundary law. And this one here is another example where we have a Fermi surface, which is circular in this case. And in this case, well, again, we find a logarithmic correction to the boundary law. So we see that there are many things happening here. If I say that I want this to go up, will it go up? Or do I have to press? Hello. I don't know which one it is. OK.
It doesn't go up?
I don't know. There are many buttons here. This one? Okay, thanks. So are the lights on now? Okay. So let's get to a conclusion then. Let me draw a table for you, and that's going to be what we've learned from fermions. From free fermions, what we've seen is that, let me have a table with a dimension, a special dimension, and then we could have gap systems. We could have gapless systems. And then we could have, so we could have Fermi surface. How do I do this? This one here. Or with Fermi surface. And by Fermi surface in general, I will distinguish so D minus one dimensional. Okay. I'll explain what I mean by this. And so let's start with dimension one. In one dimension, what we've seen is that if we have a gap, we have that the entanglement entropy goes as a constant. Saturates to a constant. If we have no gap, then it goes as some universal, well, some constant here times log L. Okay? That's what we've learned from free fermions in one dimension. In two dimensions, we have that if the system is gapless, then we have that this goes as L, and the entropy scales as the size of the boundary. And if we have a gapless case, it still scales as L, except in the case where we have one-dimensional Fermi surface. And so this happens also in three dimensions. We generalize these calculations. We find in two dimensions, if we have a Fermi, sorry, in three dimensions, if we have a Fermi surface of dimension two, we'll find logarithmic corrections. And so the general structure is that when we have d dimensions, we have a boundary law if the system is gapped. Okay, that's the boundary law that we've been discussing. If the system is gapless, but we don't have a lot of zero modes, so in the Fermi, you can think of a Fermi surface as containing infinitely many zero modes. If the Fermi surface has dimension, if the Fermi surface has dimension d minus one, then we always see the logarithmic corrections. And if the Fermi surface has dimension less than d minus one, we don't see the Fermi surface, the corrections, the logarithmic corrections. Okay, so.
Without a Fermi surface?
Sorry?
What do you mean without a Fermi surface?
Without the d minus one Fermi surface, d minus one dimensional. So, right, so imagine that you can have a Fermi surface, right? But if you change a little bit the dispersion relation, at some point you'll reduce to, say, having two or three zero modes, finite number of zero modes. We saw a dispersion relation that was positively defined except that it had two zero modes, right? It was touching zero in two points only. So you have zero mode. That's why this system is still gapless.
Oh, okay.
But there are not enough, in a sense, to show a logarithmic correction. And the rule is that if you look at the zero modes, if they form a d minus one dimensional manifold in two dimensions, if the Fermi surface is one dimensional, then you'll see the logarithmic correction.
Okay.
If you only have in two dimensions, if you only have a finite number of them, you won't see logarithmic correction.
But you still have a finite number on the other side, just that you have a surface of them.
No. In the circle, you have infinitely many. Where in the the system, you have a thermodynamic limit there. You have infinitely many modes, zero modes.
Okay.
Peter?
Is there some intuition about like what two quantities you're comparing? Because in
sorry?
For a larger D,
yeah,
you don't have a D minus one Fermi surface, you have a D minus two Fermi surface.
Yeah, that one doesn't seem to give you.
Is there some kind of intuition? What, that's still infinite, but you're comparing that to something.
We're trying to build intuition, and this is the initial result that we have, right? That you need enough zero modes to find a logarithmic correction, and enough means as a manifold with d minus one dimensions as a Fermi surface. Okay? And so, for instance, in one dimension, now we realize that well, what's the d minus one Fermi surface? It's a finite number of zero modes, right? So in one dimension, we see the logarithmic correction, even if we just have a finite number of zero modes, because that's a zero-dimensional manifold of zero modes. Okay, so there's this very nice structure. So again, you look at the ground state, okay, and you learn about the dispersion relation, which has to do with excitable states. So you look at the entanglement of the ground state, and you learn about the dispersion relation. And so tomorrow, tomorrow will be the last class on entanglement in many-body systems. And I'll explain a number of applications, a number of results that look similar to this one. Okay? So the things that we can learn about many body systems by just looking at entanglement. Okay. Any question?
I saw the number of k depends on as you just advertised.
This
depends
one?
On, the k depends on the number of Fermi surface. Or
the zero mode.
Yeah, okay. Yes. And I saw because you skip the part of the leap, the z equals 2k. I understand that.
There is no entanglement there.
Yeah, I understand. But
I cannot put.
I understand, but if you make the band such that you have two quadratic bands.
Yes.
So the band below this is equal to 0 can occupy. So I believe in that case, entanglement will be not 0.
Yeah.
So that can change the coefficient.
So you could do that, yes.
Maybe.
Yes. But it's a very good question.
Yeah.
Some people have looked at that. So it's not Lorentz invariant, the emergent theory, it's Galilean invariant or something like this.
Yeah.
So you have a different group of symmetries.
But I say it's not non-resolved, or it's
known. Right? I've seen the reference where they analyze this case. It just doesn't fit naturally in this classification.
No, I know. I just say what it is. So
sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.